Bohemia is a district of Paris, bordered on the north by cold, on the west by hunger, on the south by love, and on the east by hope. It is a stage in artistic life, a prologue to the academy, the hospital, or the morgue. Its inhabitants are as abstinent as anchorites for most of the time. But when they have money, they spend it on loving the youngest and prettiest and drinking the oldest and best. When the money is gone, their women leave them and they drink water. It is a charming and a terrible life. But as long as men and women are young and not quite virtuous, this kind of life will exist.
Clive Francis, Christopher Good, Christopher Schooler and David Timpson play the Bohemians, and Polly James, Miriam Margulies, and Tina Marion, their women, in David Nathan's dramatization of Scène de la Vie Bohème by Henri Mergel. The Bohemians.
Under the door and leave me alone.
Well, I was ordered to hand it to you personally, Monsieur Schoenard.
Oh, God. Was she pretty?
Pretty? That's a good one. Pretty.
Give it to me, then.
It's from Monsieur Bernard. You're notice to quit. Unless you come up with the rent. 75 francs and not a penny less, he says. Or out you go. 3/4, I mean. And no tricks, Monsieur Bernard says. No sneaking out with your furniture. You go and it stays until you settle up.
You can tell Monsieur Bernard he can keep his poxy room. I have acquired new chambers. I would have paid and moved yesterday, only... They're being redecorated to provide a proper setting for my effects.
Well, your effects stay here until you've coughed up 75 francs. Monsieur Bernard says that not one effect moves till then, particularly the piano, seeing as it's the only effect worth having.
I have your money.
Well, give it to me then, and I'll give you a receipt.
Your money is here, in my head. A song that will be heard in every cafe in Paris. It's about a young girl picking a daisy to pieces by a blue lake while she thinks of her poor lost lover. It may not be original, but it's very fashionable. Here is the moonlight. A swan glides over the water. A ripple.
Oh, dear. Laden up to the starry sky, and in the azure water on the silver-waved lake.
That's very fine, that silver-waved.
Anyway, that's as far as I've got, but it won't take long. It will make me a fortune in which Monsieur Bernard's 75 francs will be but as a drop in the
silver-waved lake. All right, Monsieur Schoenard. You've got 4 hours, and when you've finished, bring it down to the lodge and sing it to me. I'll sing you a receipt.
Lake, cake, bake, snake, mistake, break, shake, hake, a hake in the lake.
Sits and picks a daisy, gently parting leaf from leaf.
Oh, daisies don't have leaves, God Almighty. They have petals.
Gently plucking at the petals, the maiden's mind grows hazy at the memory of her.
Of a what? Nettles? Metals? It's no use.
No.
The slippers will have to stay and the house coat. But I'll take the crockery.
God. If I fall downstairs with this lot in my pockets, I'll be cut to ribbons.
Seen you for ages.
Things have been difficult. The streets are paved with creditors, but what can you do? On the first day of spring, how could I stay indoors? The police should do something about it.
About what?
The absolutely scandalous immorality. I was woken up by the sound of bed springs in the next room. I looked out of the window and the girl opposite was taking off her clothes to go to bed with her lover.
So what?
At 10 o'clock in the morning. I called in a friend and he opened the door an inch and behind him a girl laughed. Everyone's making love this morning. We seem to be the only two in the whole wide and throbbing world who are not actually at it.
But what about Louise? Oh. That was a lifelong passion, if ever I saw one. Should have lasted at least 6 months.
Ah, Louise. The body of a Venus, the face of a nymph, the mind of an ant, and the morals of a rabbit. I spoke to her of the poetry of love, compared her to Eloise, Juliet, Helen. She thought I was talking about old girlfriends. I wrote her a poem called When Beauty Rises in the Morn. And she said she'd read it some other time when she wasn't so busy with her hair. And yet I loved her. Still love her with an undying passion.
Well, in that case, what happened? You would not have been the first man to make love with his ears closed.
The little idiot went off with a medical student who told her she had the most perfect body he had ever seen. As he was only acquainted with corpses, it is not surprising. All the same, he hit on the truth by accident. For her body was marvelous and spoke a more eloquent language than ever came from her lips. Are you still writing for the Corsair, Mouton?
Just about. But I won't be unless you can help me out. Were you at the play last night?
Of course.
I was delayed by some urgent business, and when I woke up, it was too late. What I'd like is a summary of the plot.
What I would like is 5 francs.
In that case, some criticism as well.
Done.
And a few epigrams.
Oh, very well.
I have a lot of space to fill. Some general opinions about the state of the theatre would be useful.
They're a bit worn. There's not a waiter in Paris who hasn't heard them at least a dozen times.
How many lines will they fill?
About 40.
My God, Rudolph, you have very strong opinions. Will you lend them to me?
I'll sell them to you. Make it 10 francs.
That's half my fee.
But it's all my opinions.
Do you really think I look like Moses?
It's the stunts that counts, Musette. That is a very Moses-like attitude. The robe hides everything, and after I've given you a long white beard, God himself wouldn't know the difference.
You know, Marcel, most of the artists I pose for are interested in my breasts. I've been frequently complimented on them.
No doubt. But the subject is the crossing of the Red Sea, and there is little scope for breasts. Now, if it was the worshippers of the golden calf, it would be different. I could get quite a few breasts in there. Maybe I'll do that next. But at the moment, it is the Israelites and the Egyptians and a big wave. No, not that kind of wave. Please keep still.
I once knew an Egyptian. A pasha, he told me. He thought my breasts were very fine. I found out later that he came from Algiers and sold brass ornaments, but by then it was too late.
This painting will endure longer than brass. It will hang in the Institute and you will be famous. If they ever find out it's you under the beard. Or as Pharaoh.
Oh, Pharaoh as well.
Without a beard. They had very feminine faces. Came from marrying their sisters. You'll be more recognisable as Pharaoh than as Moses.
But not the breasts.
They were not that feminine.
How many people will be in your picture?
About 160 in detail. Several thousand more in a kind of blur. On the left are the children of Israel looking back in amazement. The Egyptians are on the right, and towering over them is an immense wave. They've just seen it, and they're looking pretty amazed, too.
I knew an Israelite as well, Mr. Solomon. Well, you know, the one with the junk shop at the corner of the Rue Huchette. He wanted me to pose for him. Though I don't think he's ever held a brush in his life.
I'll have to stop for the time being. I'm moving rooms today. New place isn't far, and we can continue there.
But what's wrong with this room?
I've been here a month, and I'm tired of it. Besides, it's too small, and I don't like clutter. The new room's much bigger.
Clutter? A mattress on the floor, your easel and some canvas screens? That's not much clutter.
Not much. Those screens depict the interior of a Venetian palace. Look, a ballroom. Its chandeliers gleaming, a balcony hanging over water, a great reception hall full of Louis XIV chairs and tables and escritoire. You won't find many rooms around here with furniture like that.
Careful, man, watch out, the ballroom sliding off. Catch it, man.
Down. Now there's a tear in the marble. Well, this is the place. Put the things down there, just inside the courtyard. Now, where is the portal?
Marcel, this room, is it much bigger?
Oh, yes.
You see, I'm having a little problem with my landlord, and I wondered if, just for a few days, perhaps, you know, that is, if you wouldn't mind.
Stay? With me? Wonderful, yes, certainly, by all means.
Oh, good. That's settled, then.
But?
But what? If you don't want me to stay, I'll have no trouble finding somewhere else.
No, it's not that. Really, it isn't.
What then?
Well, there is only one room, and you are 18, and I am 22, and made of gunpowder that will be detonated by a single glance.
Good. Then everything is settled. You want me, and I should like you, so let's shake hands and enjoy ourselves.
Flowers, pretty flowers. Buy a pretty flower for the pretty lady.
Here. I'll take them all.
Thank you, Monsieur.
Thank you.
A small token of our love, Musette.
Love? Oh, no, it's not love, Marcel. We like each other, that's all. It's not love, but perhaps it's the seed of love. I'll stay with you as long as I... as long as these flowers last.
I should have bought Immortelle.
That wouldn't have done much good. Their other name is Love Lies Bleeding.
Ah, the new tenant, the gentleman of the top floor back. Oh, welcome, sir. Your room will be ready by the time the rest of your effects arrive. Monsieur Bernard! Monsieur Bernard! The new top floor back's here and... Oh, bless me. Well, there's a letter here for you, sir. A letter.
Coming, coming. A letter? A letter, did you say? You'll excuse me, sir, while I read my communication. Give me the correspondence, Gerard, the correspondence. Important affairs, sir. An epistle, sir, must be given immediate attention.
Of course, there's no hurry at all.
It's from that swine, Chenard.
Friend landlord. Politeness compels me to inform you that I'm under the cruel necessity of abandoning the old custom of paying rent.
You what?
Times are hard, and the returns on which I counted have failed. Of the considerable sums I had confidently expected, only 3 francs have materialized, a sum so insignificant that I wouldn't insult you by offering it.
Oh, wouldn't you?
Better days will come, both for France and for me.
How will I?
When they do, I shall hurry to inform you of their arrival and to withdraw from your lodgings those precious articles of furniture which I leave under the protection of both you and the law, the latter especially, as it prevents you from selling them for a full year. I commend to your special care my piano and the large box containing 60 locks of hair. Therefore, dear landlord, I grant you full permission to dispose of the room in which I have lately dwelt.
Permission? Full permission? So I can let his room, can I? With full permission. Oh, that swine, Schoenar.
P.S.
Aye?
Pray refer any callers to my temporary lodgings, the 3rd tree as you leave the Bois de Boulogne and turn into the Avenue Saint-Cloud, 5th branch.
Well, what are you waiting for, you fool, Gerard? Run upstairs and see what that swine Chenard has left. He's probably stolen most of the effects.
And now my room, sir, if you please. My furniture will get ruined if exposed too long to the sunlight. The paint will fade.
Room? Oh, yes, your room, sir. My porter, Durand, told me he had found a gentleman tenant for the highly desirable vacant 6th-floor chamber with every modern comfort. If that swine Chenard has stolen anything, send for the police. Very sorry, sir. A little difficulty with a tenant. Well, an ex-tenant, most unusual. This is a very respectable house, sir, madam, I assure you.
It all seems to be here, Monsieur Bernard. Not an effect moved, as far as I can make out, and maybe a few bits of clothes on that old cracked bowl and plate, sir, but nothing else.
Well, bring it all down, you know, and lock it in the cellar. Then move this gentleman's furniture to the 6th floor back. You and your lady, sir, will be installed in no time at all. Once your furniture arrives, we'll have it upstairs in a trice, sir.
But my furniture is already here, sir.
Yeah, Oh, yeah. Furniture? What those screams? You are a humorist, sir. You are speaking jocular-like, eh? Very funny, sir.
Funny? Why funny?
Well, you must have more than this, sir. What about my security?
Isn't a Venetian palace sufficient security for the rent of an attic?
No, sir, it is not. I want real furniture, real chairs, chairs you can sit on, tables you can eat from. I want mahogany.
Mahogany is very common. Everybody has it.
But surely, sir, you must have some furniture.
It takes up too much room. You get a place so full of chairs, there's no room to sit down.
A bed? You must have a bed, at least. I mean, what do you sleep on?
A mattress. See, it's rolled up here. And a good conscience.
Excuse me, sir. Monsieur Chouinard's chair. If you don't mind, sir, if you'd just open the cellar door.
You are, you fool! Did you ask this gentleman what his occupation was? Could you not see that he was a painter?
Why, no, sir. Well, he gave me 5 francs in advance for the rent. I would have suspected a thing like that.
But he's got no furniture.
I do not believe in furniture.
Not believe in furniture? You, sir, you're an atheist. Sir, if you have no furniture, you have no room. Kindly remove your things from my courtyard.
I have paid 2 weeks' rent in advance, and it has been accepted. The law says that the room is mine.
And the law says I may refuse a tenant who has no security.
But you have the security of 2 weeks' rent.
I will return it to you.
I will not take
you it. You cannot have the room.
I will have the room.
How much furniture do you need for your security, Monsieur Bernard?
Well, it's hard to say.
Marcel, if I'm to be Moses and Pharaoh, I cannot stand all day with my arms outstretched. I must have a place to rest, where I can lie down. You will be buying a bed, at least, won't you, Marcel? Monsieur Bernard, will a bed be enough?
Well, it's very little. An armchair, table, perhaps, or some ordinary chairs.
A bed, nothing else.
Unless
what?
Unless you would care to rent a furnished room instead, sir, a room of superior quality, and on the 5th floor, sir, it'll cost slightly more, of course, being furnished with the very best effects, including a piano.
How much more?
Well, say 4 francs, 5 francs a week, in advance, of course.
I really don't see why I should. I shall be cluttered up, I shall keep bumping into things.
A bed, Marcel, a bed.
I'll take the furnished room, Monsieur Bernard.
Splendid. That will be another 5 francs, sir, to make up the 2 weeks' rent in advance, as the law permits.
Very well. Have you changed for 500?
500? Durand, run to the bank and get the gentleman's note changed. Then hurry back and get his effects upstairs and take that armchair back as well. Quickly now. 495 francs changed.
490. You may keep the 5 francs, Durand, on condition that every morning you come to my room and tell me the day of the week, the month, what the weather is like, and which government is in power.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. With pleasure, sir.
Is this chair free, sir?
I don't know about that, but certainly it's not occupied.
Thank you.
You wish to order, sir?
Yes, 2 half portions of rabbit stew, please.
The other gentleman has already ordered, sir.
What has that to do with it? They're both for me.
2 half portions of rabbit.
And a glass of red.
Not 2 half glasses.
What would be the point? The full glasses are already half empty.
Yes, sir.
I see you have grasped one of the economic facts of life, that 2 halves are better than one.
Not better, more.
To the hungry, more is better.
As you were reading, sir, I took you for a philosopher, but I see you have a great grasp of reality.
Even philosophers go hungry. That's one of the reasons they need a philosophy.
And I see you are more than a philosopher. You are a walking encyclopedia. Theology, Greek, Latin, literature, drama, mathematics. You label the pockets of your coat as if it were a library.
My coat is my library. My books are my home. Besides, for my major work on the history of the Church of France and the pagan, Judaic, and even Christian influences it has come under from time to time, I need to be able to make quick reference to many esoteric matters. My name, sir, is Colline. Gustave Colline.
And I, sir, am Alexander Chouinard.
An artist, no doubt.
A musician. A composer. But I was once a painter. It was my experience of painting the view from the top of Notre Dame that inspired my symphony on the influence of blue in art. I used to see a great deal of sky whilst lying on my back waiting for inspiration.
You have written a symphony, then?
I am writing a symphony. In the meantime, I teach pianoforte whenever I can get a pupil.
And I teach mathematics, philosophy, rhetoric, history, both natural and unnatural.
Unnatural?
What men have done, as distinct from what animals do.
Ah.
Geography, calligraphy, oratory, and virtually anything else you care to mention.
Oh, you must know a great deal.
I do.
Ah, my rabbit stew. Oh,
yeah, it's not yours, sir, this gentleman's. He ordered this, sir, and it's the last. No more rabbit stew.
Oh, in that case, you must share this with me.
Oh, no, I would...
Waiter, another plate, please.
Yes, sir.
Would you deprive me of the pleasure of sharing with a fellow artist?
Well, you put it that way. I'll buy the wine. A bottle, waiter. And some bread.
It seems that we are very fortunate. Hmm? There's a head in this stew that indicates without doubt that it comes from a rabbit. The configuration of the skull is unmistakable. I once studied biology.
Science must be a great comfort. It is so certain about things.
I hope you will let me keep the head. I know some people don't like it, but I consider it to be a great delicacy.
One man's head is another man's treat, as Robespierre said. Oh, but if you really like it, have it by all means. I thought you said you wanted the head.
So I did, and so I have.
I think you must be mistaken, but I have it here. It's just emerged from the gravy.
So you have. Mm. The only explanation I can think of is that we are honoured by partaking of a bicephalous rabbit.
By what?
By two cephalous-headed. It comes from the Greek. Buffon cites some cases, but it's a very rare condition. None at all have been seen in modern times. It is a phenomenon.
I don't think I've ever eaten a phenomenon before.
It must be celebrated with another bottle.
Ah,
no, well, no, it's all right. I had a pupil today. Wait up!
Coming, sir. Oh, come on, Amy. Give us a song.
Amy! Oh.
Besides, there's no one to accompany me.
Oh, where's the pianist? Gerard has gone. There was a girl who asked for him and he has not been seen since. What can I do?
Gentlemen, gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen, we are fortunate in having with us tonight the celebrated composer and musician, Monsieur Alexander Schaunard.
You're too kind.
Mademoiselle, I'm sure that someone of your charm and grace could easily persuade Monsieur Schaunard to accompany you at the piano.
Ah, or anywhere else, for that matter.
Do you know fleeting love?
A fleeting love? Intimately.
Then, let us make some music together, Monsieur Schaunard.
Sit down and take a glass of wine.
I am starving, and literature is indifferent. Journalism, on the other hand, has just rewarded me with 10 francs. I sold Mouton some opinions at so much a line. As a grocer sells cheese, so many ounces, so many francs. My poetry is a different trade altogether, but I expect you disapprove and think I betray my muse.
On the contrary, I have no time for the artist who thinks he's above common humanity. Tell some of them that the 5-franc piece is a great power in the land, that boots do not fall ready black from heaven, and they turn you and call you a tease. But here's Schaunard and the delightful Miss Fanny. Rudolph, this is Schaunard, a composer.
Schaunard,
this is Rudolph, a poet.
I could see you were a literary man.
You are very observant.
Well, it would be hard to miss the holes in your coat.
One, two bottles, sir, with the compliments of the patron for the music.
Oh, a benefactor, a patron of the arts.
Oh, Louvet's not a bad chap, though he usually prefers literary men to musicians or painters. He once met de Balzac and has been very respectful to the written word ever since. But he's no ear for music or eye for colour.
Oh. It's just as well, then, that I didn't take my gloves off.
Oh, God. Green hands?
I've heard of green fingers, but there's...
Two phenomena in the course of one evening. First, a bicephalous rabbit, and now verdant hands. Show me, my dear. I don't think any of the classical writers ever encountered such a thing. Caesar described the British as being painted blue, not green, and the Native American is turned red Indian, although I believe this is not a literal description. Of course, there are Negroes of various shades of brown, Asiatics of a yellow complexion, and a disease that also turned...
I haven't got a disease. You'd better not put it about, monsieur, that I am diseased. The last one that said that finished up in hospital.
With a disease?
With a cracked skull. I get these hands through work. I'm a dipper.
What?
Of course, I should have known. The artificial flower industry involves a number of processes, but the basic one, the one on which all the others depend, is the method of making them green. Femi dips the leaves and makes them green. She's a force of nature.
She is a flower. I shall write a symphony to these hands.
We must drink to Femi's hands.
Yeah.
Anyone would think I had nothing else the way you lot go on.
Oh, are they green too, those other things?
White. All white.
Oh, what a pity. If they were green, it would be like making love to a mirror. I shall write a poem to your green hands, Femi, and I shall call you Femi Tinta. No, Winter. No, Splinter. Splinter. Damn, they're all cold and hard, these
friends. Yes, and she is warm and soft. Gentle minor chords. Rounded rallentandos. Love in lento. To the green hands, the red lips, the golden voice, and white body of Euphemia Tinta.
The green hands of Femi Tinta.
Colleen, do you think he wants to play her, paint her, or
all three, I should think.
Femi was a grisette. The grisette was the working girl of Paris. She was neither immoral nor virtuous, but knew how to reconcile work with pleasure. She went to church in the morning with her mother and to the ball in the evening with her lover. She was easy to take and impossible to keep. A bird of passage that nested as fancy or sometimes necessity dictated for a day or night in the garrets of the Latin Quarter. She could be detained by a whim or by a serious passion for a few ribbons. She was half bee, half grasshopper, and she sang at her work all day, loved with all her heart, and sometimes threw herself out of the window.
Cheating love, cheating love, vows it will stay, then flies away.
Closing time, I beg you.
But the weather, man, look at the weather. It's absolutely pissing down, and I live in Montmartre.
And I live, where do I live, Sona?
In your books, Colleen. But other than that, damned if I know. He's a very old friend, Rudolph, but we only met this evening.
I have not known the gentleman long myself, but then I am fated to have my most beautiful friendships cut short. Oh. Take my wonderful Louise for it.
You wouldn't turn Honoré de Balzac out on a night like that.
Monsieur de Balzac would have his carriage at the door. The rain wouldn't touch him.
It wouldn't dare.
In 20 years, when we are all as famous as de Balzac, would you like it to be known that we all contracted pneumonia through you and died young?
There seems to be a logical flaw in that argument, Rudolph, but for the life of me, I can't see what it is.
I'm sorry, gentlemen, but my respect for the arts is second only to my respect for my bed.
Come on, there is no use arguing with him. Anyway, I live just around the corner, and you must all come home with me. Let's settle. I seem to have three lousy francs only. Colleen, you work it out and I'll pay you my share tomorrow.
Share? What share? Sharing is for bookkeepers and clerks. We give what we have, and I believe I have enough.
And I think...
No, I will settle.
Then I'll get some food and drink to take back to Shawmut.
Oh, excellent.
Perfect. Six bottles, if you please, and some pâté.
A party!
I said pâté. Mouth for the same thing.
A pâté party! And Femi will sing for us.
I'll sing. Why do I only love poor men?
We are rich in everything but money.
And whenever I do meet a rich man, I hate him. Believe me, Alexander,
yes,
I would never go with a rich man if it wasn't for the Why do I only love poor men?
Why can't she fall for the rich? Our goal in a shoe makes her thrill through and through, and most of her lovers are pushed for a sou. And though she could get lots of dresses, she's never been given a stitch.
The man I advance on to start a romance.
I don't think I've ever been so happy, Musette. But tomorrow you'll leave me, or the next day.
Tomorrow is an absurdity of the calendar. Tomorrow there may be an earthquake. Tonight, at least, we're on solid ground. I do not believe in the future. In fact, I'm not at all sure that it exists.
Where are you going?
To water the flowers, of course.
So drunk, so noisy tonight.
Oh, go to sleep, my love. Go to sleep.
Spanish, there's a key in the lock. Here we are. Shh. Good God, there's a man in my bed.
You wish to see me about something? Perhaps a portrait commission?
Crowley, he's brought us into the wrong room. No, it is.
So I knew, and me too. I mean.
I'm very sorry. I seem to have made a mistake. This appears not to be my room after all.
Be good enough to excuse our friend here. He's as drunk as three fiddlers.
That's quite all right.
And yet that garment is mine. That house coat with the stars on it, that's mine. And so is the piano.
All pianos look alike. Black and white.
But they don't all sound alike. There can't be two pianos with that particular vile fault. Or two house coats like that, spangled with stars. Memory of a past love. And they're altogether gone now, Femi. Did you by any chance buy this piano and this house coat from that thieving porter? These are my slippers. My papoose. My dear little papoose. There's a hole in the left sole.
Let me see. Yes. There's no doubt. There's a hole in the left sole. Yeah.
Come now, sir, admit it. You bought that hole from the porter, didn't you?
How do you explain your presence among my household objects?
Wearing his papoose.
It is all true. This is your room, your piano, your housecoat, your papoose.
Stay.
It is also my room, too.
But, sir, if my friend recognizes...
And you acknowledge...
It can't be that you share the room. You would know each other.
If you would all sit down. No, not on the bed, please. I have a friend somewhere under the covers.
You didn't tell me, Marcel, that you were expecting company.
Alexander!
Oh, it was not mine, Femi, not mine. She wasn't here when I left. No, for that matter, was this painted palace.
I will explain.
Oh, but perhaps we can liquefy the explanation. Have you glasses?
Yes. But why am I carrying my bowl and plate in my pocket? Oh, God, now I remember. I should be up a tree in the Bois de Boulogne.
The tree! You live in a tree!
Oh, it has a very wide branch.
When I got here today, when
We got here today. What? The landlord had just had a letter from Monsieur Chouinard to say that...
Sir, it is the month of April 1840. There is mud in the streets, and His Majesty Louis Philippe is still King of France. Good God, Monsieur Chouinard, what are you doing here?
I flew from my tree, tapped the window with my beak, and when it was opened, I and my friends flew in.
You always were a joker, Monsieur Chouinard. You are joking, aren't you, sir?
Our arrangement was that you should inform me of the state of the weather and the government. No other conversation was requested, and none will be permitted. Kindly go to the nearest restaurant and bring us breakfast for six.
Yes, sir. At once, sir.
As you invited us to supper last night, you will do me the honour of having breakfast here this morning.
Oh, my God, what time is it?
Nearly 9 o'clock.
At 9, I have a lesson to give an Indian prince who, for some unfathomable reason, wishes to learn Arabic.
So you know Arabic as well?
No, but he's very rich and I'm one less mad.
I should have been at work hours ago.
And I have a play to finish.
Then we shall all have dinner tonight. We'll meet here at 8 o'clock.
8 o'clock.
Oh. Goodbye.
See you then.
Goodbye.
I must go too.
Why?
Well, I've got to find some money from somewhere. There's an old uncle who sometimes pays me if I let him tell me the story of how he retreated from Moscow. And he wants me to write a piece of music about it, but I keep telling him you can't make music out of a defeat. Well, maybe a Russian could, but not a Frenchman.
But you will be back at 8.
No, I don't think so.
Oh?
It would not be fair to Fanny. How can I take her to bed in a tree? I've no money. Let her find someone who can look after her properly.
He's right, Marcel. All the same, it is sad.
You cannot live in a tree, Chouinard. And certainly not in this weather, can he, Musette?
Well, I don't expect to for long. Last night, Colleen said something about three pupils of his sisters who were studying mathematics and wanted to learn music as well. Three pupils. And if I sell my song, I'll be able to pay the rent I owe and collect my furniture.
You mean you will take your bed?
Certainly. I have a strong sentimental attachment to my bed. It's full of memories, and there's room for a lot more.
Two of those memories are ours.
And legally, this lodging is mine, furnished. The rent's paid in advance.
Oh, the lodging, yes. But once I pay, the furniture is mine.
So what it boils down to is that you have, or will have, furniture and no lodgings, and we will have lodgings but no furniture.
That seems to be the situation.
Well, then, this is what I propose. It is a big room, and I will supply another bed. We will be screened from each other at moments of delicacy by my Venetian palace.
And the rent?
No problem. For the moment, I have enough for the rent. When you get money, it'll be your turn.
I expect it will. You know, I once dreamt that I was the Emperor of Morocco and had married the Bank of France.
And so the Bohemian Club was formed and met regularly at the Café Mamou, called by Louvet, the proprietor, after the Greek god of play and pleasure. There was Rudolph the poet, Marcel the painter, Chouinard the musician, and Colleen the philosopher. Their conversation was such that the waiter who served them regularly became an idiot in the prime of his life. For much, though not all of the time, the members of the Bohemian Club were accompanied by their women. Chouinard's Fémy, Marcel's Musette, and Rudolph's Mimi. Colleen was never seen with a woman, but it was supposed that one sat at home, deformed in mind and body, by the task of copying his philosophical works in a neat hand. Mimi was one of those sickly Parisian flowers that are born and grow up in the shade and go mad with joy when at length they see the sun one day. She was very pale, with dead white skin, somewhat faded-looking chestnut hair, and bluish-grey eyes. She was not at all prudish and could stand tobacco, smoke, and literary conversation without getting a headache. Her face wore an angelic expression devoid of all moral sense. A shameless little hussy. Really, she was a lovely creature with a voice like a pair of cymbals. The way she and Rudolph met was very commonplace. She had once spent a night in his room. He slept in a chair, and she left it as pure as the Immaculate Virgin, which proves only one thing, and that is that Rudolph was a cretin. The next time fate threw them together, it was very different. He was desperately short of money, and returned to his lodgings one night to find the key missing from its usual place and the landlord waiting for him.
You remember what I told you this morning? Have you got the money?
I am to receive some tonight, so I will pay you in the morning.
How can you get money tonight? It is 11 o'clock and you've come home. Do you expect to find any in your room? There is none here, I can assure you. No, sir, I am very sorry, but I have let your room to someone else.
Very well, but before I go, I must claim my property.
Your property, sir? You have no property.
You are mistaken, sir. There is a five-act tragedy in my room worth more than any article of furniture.
That bundle of papers, you can have it. I've neither right nor wish to detain words, sir. If the new tenant has not gone to bed, you can get it right now. Well, I must say I don't envy you, young man. I wouldn't like to be out on a night like this without a room.
Don't worry yourself on my account. There is a box of the Odeon Theatre that I am permitted to use through the kindness of a friend.
Come in.
I'm sorry to disturb you, miss, but this young man left some papers behind. They're in the bureau, I think. He's just collecting them and then we'll be off.
This was your room then, Rudolph?
Good heavens. It's little...
Mimi!
Of course, Mimi. How delightful. It's been...
3 months since...
As long as that, when we...
Unforgettable.
I was much younger.
3 months?
An age. I have been meaning...
Then why didn't you?
I didn't know where.
Now you do.
Listen to the rain.
It's a terrible night. Yes. Monsieur Benoit.
Yes, miss.
I told you I might be expecting a friend this evening.
So you did.
Well, this is the gentleman.
Well, he should have said.
He didn't know.
In that case.
Good night.
Good night, miss. Sir.
Oh, my dear Mimi.
Are you hungry?
Oh, you are a dear, dear girl.
I'll make something to eat.
Oh, soon. Oh, you know.
Yes, Rudolph.
You could never have turned me out on a night like this.
Couldn't I? Why not?
You have the bump of hospitality.
The very next day, Mimi and Rudolph found a room in the same house as Marcel and Musette and Shona and Femi, and they all lived together very happily for several weeks. The couples were united by the registrar of the district, an official of the Ministry of Caprice. Sometimes, though, the unexpected happens.
You know, Musette, this is very serious. I don't know how it came about.
We must have been very clumsy. We didn't take enough precautions.
Is it really serious?
Could hardly be more serious, Rudolph. The fact is that this lady and I have just made an alarming discovery. We are in love with one another. We must have been attacked by it while we were asleep.
Have you any proof? Don't you think you could be exaggerating?
It seems pretty certain. For one thing, we cannot bear one another.
And we cannot leave one another.
Mimi, I have news.
Eh?
Musette dotes on Marcel and will not leave him.
Oh, poor girl. She has such a good appetite, too.
And for his part, Marcel is head over heels in love with Musette.
Poor wretch, him being so jealous.
That is true. We're both pupils of Othello.
Never mind that. How's my dress going?
Yesterday I wrote enough for 2 sleeves, and today I've done enough to pay for the bodice.
How many pages will be needed for the skirt?
That depends. But as you aren't very tall, I reckon that 10 pages or 50 lines, with 8 words to the line, should be enough to get a decent length of material.
I know I'm small, but it mustn't look as if it's been skimped. Dresses have been worn very full this year, and I would like nice, large folds so that it rustles as I walk.
In that case, I'll get in an extra word a line, and you will rustle beautifully.
Oh. Alexander.
Yes, Femi.
Alexander, Rudolph is writing a whole new outfit for Mimi. I need some new clothes, too. My gown is in shreds.
Here's 3 sous. What? Go and buy yourself a needle and thread.
We really must do something about the girls. Mimi has a raging desire for boots. And after all, the fine arts and literature have been flourishing lately.
We're earning almost as much as street porters.
Fortunately, I shall soon be in a position to satisfy these ridiculous demands for finery. I found an Englishman willing to pay me 200 francs for merely playing the piano. 300 if I'm successful. You see, his neighbour is an actress with a parrot that never stops squawking. It's driving him insane. She even got the parrot to take English lessons so he could abuse the man in his own language. Then he hit on the piano as a form of warfare. The law allows music from morning till night, and the actress and the parrot sleep until noon. So I play all day from 7 a.m. until dark. Only I'm forbidden to make music. I must play scales only. Oh, like that all day, non-stop. He brings food and drink to the piano. It isn't exactly art, but it is the means by which art may flourish. The first thing I'm going to do with the money is to treat myself to that yellow nankeen jacket and the hunting horn in old Solomon's shop.
They're up to something. I know they're up to something.
They found three other women.
Oh, they're certainly excited about something, but I don't think it's other women. Marcel gives me constant proof of his devotion.
So does Alexander. But at their age, that doesn't mean a thing.
All the same, they're up to something.
Someone.
I have died an owl and been reborn a peacock.
I am a dazzling sight. In the street, poor people stopped and stared at me as I went by. The children asked for alms and I gave them a franc.
Women asked for nothing and I gave them a smile.
Life is a thing of beauty. When Schaunard gave me money, I quivered from my diseased cravat to my decrepit shoes. I ran to replace them. And now we will ransack the shops for bonnets and dresses.
Yes.
And
ribbons
and boots. And as tomorrow is May Day, we will go out into the country and dazzle the rustics. You are not to move. Mimi was absolutely firm. We must all four wait here in the street for them. Mm. They said they would be out on the dot of 8, and it is not yet 9. They should be out here soon.
And here they are.
How beautiful they look.
And to think they are ours. It is amazing.
And you, Colleen, my dear Colleen, can you not share our happiness?
But I do. I take my pleasure with my eyes and with my mind. They satisfy the one and you the other, dear friends. I am happy.
Let us go.
Musette, I have never seen you look more beautiful.
Well, that is because I've never been so happy. It seems as if God has put all the happiness of my life into this moment, and that there will be no more left. But it's not true, is it? We found a recipe! Alexander! Alexander!
What is it, Femi?
Well, you know how very fond I am of the green grass and things.
Yes?
And all the little birds and bees and things.
Yes?
Well, what, Femi?
Well,
in the country, one never meets anyone. There'll be no one there, Alexander. Oh. Can't we walk up and down the boulevards all day?
Nonsense!
Oh. To Fontenay!
To Fontenay!
Possible that a delicate girl like Femi could put away so much sausage.
Hey, what's in the kitty?
Yes.
I have failed in my duty. There are still 6 francs left over. Oh. What should be done with them?
Let's invest it
in government bonds.
First the money, then the love runs out. Affection drowns in the shallowest of seas. The layer of damp in a leaking boot. When the touch of a hand freezes the skin, instead of warming it, it is no longer welcome. Hunger is stronger than either lust or love. We are only fully human when we are warm and fully fed. And not always then.
I'm not lying. I stayed the night with Lucy and I swear.
You have been unfaithful. You
slut!
I would never do that, Alexander. I stayed the night with Lucille. We were talking. It got late.
Sir!
Oh, it was so bad. I stayed. Why won't you believe me, Alexander?
Don't believe you, you little whore. Because I stayed the night with Lucille.
So you're going too, Musette. What would you have me do? I stayed for 6 months with a man who feeds me on lettuce leaves and soup. I spend half the day starving and the other half dying of cold. He dresses me in cotton, and his idea of a night out is a cup of coffee and a glass of water. As love costs nothing, we are rich in that, but everything else is in short supply. If silk dresses were not so dear, and if I were not so fond of at least one good meal a day, I'd stay with my painter. At least he doesn't beat me like Chenard beat Femi. I don't blame her for leaving. Chenard's got a vile temper, even when he's not hungry. It's about time you started to think about yourself a bit more as well, Mimi.
But I love Rudolph. Besides, where would I go?
Love Rudolph? Come off it, Mimi. I know you've been seeing that young Viscount. Well, he's handsome and rich, and what's more, you've already spent several nights with him. Do you think I don't know how you got that cashmere shawl? Rudolph may be stupid enough to believe your mother gave it to you, but your mother hasn't seen one like that since she was your age, and she probably got it the same way.
Now he wants me to go and live with him. Look at this ring he gave me. I don't wear it.
Don't be a little fool, then. Go. There's nothing here but bread and kisses, and the bread's stale at that.
But the kisses aren't, Musette. All the same, you're right. I don't suppose there's anything for it but to leave them.
Ungrateful, silly creatures.
I told her to go, you know. Told her she had no spirit if she stayed. That I didn't love her anymore. A little Viscount can have had how much good it'll do him. Do you know where Femi is nowadays, Chenard?
Oh, it's perishing in here. Let's astonish the grate by making a fire.
Yes, you're right, it is. It's freezing. If I look at the thermometer, it goes down.
We have nothing to burn. Except your canvases.
Or your symphony on the influence of blue.
Never. But there is Rudolph's five-act tragedy.
What, you said it was wonderful.
I was warned then.
You did say it would set Paris alight, Rudolph.
You also said you were going to rewrite the whole of the second and third acts. That would be enough to cook breakfast on, if we had any breakfast.
Mimi thought it was wonderful, too. Into the fire with it. Here, look, here, you can have these letters, too. And her gloves.
Gloves? One glove? Where's the other?
Eh? I can't find it.
It was in the drawer.
I didn't notice.
Of course you did.
There's an old sash of Musette's over the back of that chair.
Into the fire with it.
And her letters.
A cold love makes a fine blaze.
There's a bunch of dead flowers in your room, Marcel. Why not burn them?
Oh, no, leave Marcel alone, Chenard. He's doing his best to be hard-hearted.
Well, aren't we all? Is there anything to eat?
Oh, there's some bread and a few sardines. And the coffee's heating nicely.
Oh, it will still taste like gnat's pee. It has the merest nodding acquaintance with a coffee ground. Can't we sell something?
Well, the only object of value in this neighbourhood is my crossing of the Red Sea, and that's going to the exhibition again.
What are you calling it this year?
I've given Pharaoh a Roman helmet and called it the crossing of the Rubicon. He makes a fine Caesar.
Last year he was Napoleon, and it was the crossing of the Beresina.
Look, there's 500 francs worth of colour on that picture, to say nothing of a million in genius. I shall send them that picture every year until it is engraved on their memories.
That's the only way it ever will be engraved.
Oh, hello, Colleen. Don't tell me you've joined the Philistines. They hope that if they refuse my Red Sea often enough, I will throw myself out of the window in despair. They don't know me. I will send my picture once a week to each of them at his home, in the bosom of his family, in the very heart of his private life. Their food will be burnt, their wine will turn sour, and their wives will grow bitter. They will all go mad and be taken to the asylum in straitjackets.
And if that doesn't work, Sonar can play his symphony at them.
Hey.
But as the fire was dying and the hunger was burning, deliverance knocked on the door in the shape of Monsieur Solomon, the dealer, who, acting on behalf of an eccentric English collector who wished to buy some typical modern works, offered 150 francs for the most famous modern work in the whole area, The Crossing of the Red Sea. Marcel was reluctant to part with the painting on two grounds. The first, because he thought it was worth more. The second, because he desperately wanted recognition by the despised institute. On Monsieur Solomon's offer to stand them all to dinner with as much wine as they could drink, both Marcel's doubts were quenched, or at least drowned, in the roar of acceptance from the others.
That was a very fine meal old Solomon treated us to last night. But it's nearly 24 hours ago. Do you think we could defy tradition and have two meals in one day?
Why not? The 150 francs has remained virgin.
Well, we'll send out for food and eat it here. It's cheaper.
An admirable economy. But in that case, we shall need some fire. Mm. I hear they burn charcoal in the best grates nowadays.
Soufflés. I have a strong desire for soufflés.
You can't send for soufflés to come to you. You must go to them. They would die on the way here. No, we must have something more robust. Something that will travel. Mm. There must be more than 100,000 chops on the gridiron in Paris at this very moment.
And as many steaks.
Chops and steaks. That sounds like a good start.
Yes.
I'll go for charcoal.
Yes, and I for the wine.
I will order the food.
And I'll start the fire.
There's a lot to be getting on with.
Paper. Paper. There must be paper somewhere.
That's odd. From Musette. Dated exactly a year ago today.
My dear love, don't worry about me. I shall be in shortly. I've gone out to warm myself a bit by walking. It's freezing indoors and the wood seller has cut off credit. I broke up the last two rungs of the chair, but they didn't burn long enough to cook an egg. I shall take a look at the shops. They say there's some velvet at 10 francs a yard. It's incredible. I must see it, even if I can't buy any. I'll be back for dinner, if there is any dinner. Love, Musette.
But she never did come back.
What's that you were saying, Marcel? Only that it's a wonder the girls stayed as long as they did. We didn't feed them properly and we couldn't keep them warm. It doesn't seem right that now we've got a fire and food, they should be missing it. I don't know about you two, but I think I'll drop a note to Musette, just for old time's sake.
I don't even know where Femi is.
Nor I, Mimi. Not that I want her back. Do you know where Musette is living?
No, but our friend Sidoni will. She'll forward it.
You look sad, Schoenard. Is anything the matter?
No, nothing at all. Except that we lack ladies. I miss the ladies. I miss them very deeply.
Damn you, Schoenard. Why can't you keep your mouth shut? It was agreed that we should not speak of love.
Yes.
It turns the sauces.
Maybe.
Come in. Oh, it's you, Monsieur Bernard. Do come in.
A chair for Monsieur Bernard.
Oh, thank you.
A landlord must be received with honor. And wine for the landlord.
Oh. In a clean glass.
Oh, well, I'm sorry to trouble you.
Oh, no trouble, no trouble at all. I was intending to call on you, as a matter of fact. Yes. I have a great deal to talk about.
Your good health, gentlemen.
Your health, Monsieur Bernard.
Now, you recently sent me a little piece of paper with a picture of a lady and a pair of scales on it. Very badly drawn, I have to say. A notice to quit. Mm.
A precautionary measure.
No ill feelings, quite proper. Yes. But I wanted to talk to you about this very notice to quit. I'd like to substitute it for a lease.
A lease?
Yes, a lease. This house suits me. The staircase is clean, the street is full of life, and my friends live here.
Oh, yeah, but still the last quarter's rent outstanding, you see.
Oh, we'll pay that, all right.
Oh, I do see that things have improved for you and your friends. Food and wine on the table. thank you, yes. And money on the mantelpiece. I seem to have picked the right moment. You can settle this little affair without inconvenience to your good self. Oh.
You have some property in the country, I believe, Monsieur Bernard.
Yeah, a small house and farm in Burgundy. Very small returns. Mm. Tenants, they pay practically nothing. Mm. Now, I depend on the rent from this property, sir. 60 francs, I think it is.
Another glass for Monsieur Bernard Rudolph. He's a Burgundian, so show him his fellow countryman, the Macon. That's right. Yes, 60 francs it is.
Oh, very good, yeah, excellent. I don't think I've ever tasted better.
In that case, you can't refuse another glass.
Oh, yes. now, sir, if you'd kindly pass me the money, I'll give you a receipt and detain you no longer.
Certainly. I pass the money, Rudolph.
Certainly.
Now, wait. I have a splendid idea. My uncle in Burgundy, I'm his favourite nephew, has sent me more than my usual allowance.
Oh, yeah?
Now, my trouble is that I could, if I didn't care, spend the money too fast. Mm. There are so many temptations, aren't there, Monsieur Bernard?
Oh, indeed, there are here.
So, if it's all the same to you, I'll pay you a quarter in advance.
Oh, gee, what a good idea. I'll give you another receipt. Excellent idea, splendid.
I wonder if you could do something about the chimney. Yeah. It smokes rather badly.
Why didn't you say so? I'll send someone in tomorrow to see to it. You don't know how timely this rent comes. Repairs, sundries. This is a terrible amount of sundries. Yes. You know how it is. Yeah.
Indeed I do, sir. But first we must celebrate. You know the old saying, when the wine is drawn...
Must be drunk.
Yes, exactly.
Require attention, sir. I mean, apart from the chimney, perhaps the paintwork needs freshening up.
What a good idea.
And the window lash.
The window lash?
Latch. Or sash. The window slash, I meant.
Oh, yes, the window slash. Do we need a new window slash, Rudolph?
We certainly do. There's already a patch near the latch and the sash crashed the other day.
With a patch.
Do you hear that, Monsieur Bernard? The patch, latch, and the sash crash need fixing, too.
That'll take some cash.
Sash, crash, latch, cash. It's all slashes.
Quick, Rudolph, bring up the big guns.
The rum.
That should do nicely.
Gentlemen, I've come to the conclusion that life... is a river.
Indeed it is, sir.
And happiness does not depend on riches.
Nor one swallow a summer bait.
Oh, how true. Man is a transient creature.
And the horse, the noblest of animals.
You shouldn't have beaten her, you know, at least not so much.
Beaten? Beaten who?
Little Famy. Pretty little Famy.
What the devil do you know about my Famy?
Oh, steady, Shonar.
I want to know. What's this old buffoon got to do with my Famy?
Hardly your Famy any longer, Shonar.
Famy, I'm a dear old pet.
What?
You know, I set her up and surrounded her with mahogany. Of course, it's so wonderful. It's wonderful to have a mistress who's not pitted with a smallpox. Yeah. Little apartment in the Rue Coquenard cost me lots of money. But sister love is beyond price. After all, I've 20,000 francs a year from my property in Burgundy. She needs some more money, and she shall have it. She shall have this. Where's it gone?
Of course it's gone.
Hey.
Do you expect us, moral men of impeccable morals, absolutely morals, to become accomplices of such wickedness? We cannot pay money to an old profligate so that he can plunge deeper and deeper into sin. It would not be right. It is true that we shall not pay rent, but on the other hand, we will sleep with clear consciences.
Besides, Monsieur Bernard, what would Madame Bernard say if she found you out, you old sinner?
You.
Oh, but did you see his face, Maurice, when Sidonie told him he was as green as a cucumber and twice as damp behind the ears?
I remember it distinctly. It was at that point that he turned as red as a cherry and his mouth was so dry he could only stutter.
Mariette!
Madame?
Quickly, girl, take these things. I'm soaked.
Oh, yes, madame. Madame, there's a letter for you.
A letter? Then give it to me. There's no need to whisper, you stupid girl. I have no secrets, have I, Maurice?
No, you tell me everything. Even those things I don't wish to know.
Marcel.
My dear girl, I have money in my desk, an apoplectic stroke of luck. We have a big feed simmering on the stove, some fine wines and a fire burning, just like respectable citizens. Come and pass an hour with us. We will probably eat for a week, so don't be afraid of being late. So long since I heard your laughter. Rudolph will compose poems to you, and we will drink all manner of things to our dead and gone loves, with liberty to resuscitate them. Between people like us, the last kiss is never the last. You know, I do believe if it hadn't been so cold last year, you would never have left me. You jilted me for a bundle of firewood and because you were frightened of getting red hands. You were right. But now there is a fire. Come and warm yourself with as many kisses as you like.
Maurice, I'm going out.
Out?
To dinner with a friend.
But you can't. You promised to come to the minister's soiree.
Another time, there's a good boy. It's an old friend who invites me to dinner, and real dinners in that house are as rare as eclipses.
But you promised.
I'm going. You may leave me if you like, but Marcel is the best fellow in the world, and the only one I've ever really loved.
But look what I've given you, Musette.
If his head had been gold, he would have melted it down to give me rings.
And now that he has a little fire, he invites me to come and warm myself. I was very happy with him. He had the gift of making me feel. I'll come back to you, unless you shut me out.
You couldn't say plainer that you don't love me.
Oh, come on, Maurice. You're far too sensible to begin an argument over that. You keep me like a fine horse in your stable, and I like it, because I love luxury, noise, glitter, and fun.
Do you always find such accommodating lovers as I am?
One day, when I was driving in the Champs-Élysées with my English lord, I met Marcel and his friend Rudolph. They were both on foot, both in rags and as muddy as two water dogs. I'd not seen Marcel for 3 months. Ah, I thought my heart was going to jump out of the carriage window. We talked for half an hour while the whole of fashionable Paris drove past. Then Marcel offered me a bunch of violets he had bought for a sou, and I fastened them to my waistband. When he said goodbye, my English lord wanted me to call him back to invite him to dinner with us. I kissed him for that. That's my way, Maurice. And if it doesn't suit you, you should say so at once, and I'll take my slippers and nightcap.
Well, it's sometimes a good thing to be poor, then.
No, not at all. If Marcel had been rich, I should never have left him.
Musette had never looked more seductive, more beautiful. She had an instinctive genius for being a woman. She was a coquette before she was christened. Marcel was the only man she ever loved, and she was on her way to him, almost running, when suddenly it began to snow, and being near her friend Sudoli's house, she took shelter there and found them at cards. When she left Sudoni's, she did not go to Marcel after all. There was a young man at the card party who had never had a mistress, so she went off with him. Don't ask me why she should do that when she was so in love with Marcel, but she did. Meanwhile, the feast had lasted 5 whole days. And on the 6th...
Damn!
What's the matter, Colleen?
The matter is that there are only 30 sous left.
Oh, 30 sous? That's going to play the very devil with our diet.
I anticipate a severe shortage of truffles.
Is there any more charcoal? It's getting cold.
No.
I'll go.
Musette! My dear, dear Musette! You're trembling. What's the matter?
I'm freezing.
Oh, we had such a good fire yesterday.
I see I've come a little too late.
Yes. Why?
Why?
You were not free then?
I? I not free. I'm always free.
There are 5 chairs here, and that's an odd number. Besides, one of them is a ridiculous shape. Fit only to be burnt.
Here, here.
Now, Colleen. Shonard, it's time for us to go.
Yes. Where are you going?
To buy some tobacco.
In Havana.
Now tell me why you didn't come sooner. We had such food, such wine.
Did take a long time, didn't it?
5 days to cross the Pont Neuf. You must have gone round the Pyrenees.
Oh, don't question me, Marcel. Don't ask me anything. Just let me warm myself beside you. Look, I put on my best dress for you. The fire's nice. I'll stay until tomorrow if you like.
Fire will soon go out. It'll be cold in here. And there's nothing for dinner.
So what? It will be all the more like old times.
But I think it's rather fine.
It's hideous. You look as if you've fallen off the end of the rainbow.
Boars being pursued by dogs against a blue background. Now, what is wrong with that for a shirt?
It is in the most perfect bad taste.
You think it shocks custom?
Shocks it? It stuns it.
Well, it'll have to do. Now, please, pass me that rope ladder and that cage containing the pigeon.
Where on earth are you going with that lot? What's the rope ladder for and the bird?
The rope ladder is to link me to my new mistress. Oh. The bird is a clock.
I don't want parables. I insist on the truth, and for that, you must talk in prose.
Very well. Now, do you know Romeo and Juliet?
Of course.
And you still don't understand? I am in love.
I know. I saw it the other day driving in the Champs-Élysées full of jewels and shawls.
Not with Mimi, with Juliet. Did you talk?
No, I don't even know.
I mean Mimi. Did you talk with Mimi? Did she stop?
Yes, she stopped. Who is this Juliet?
How is she?
She asked after you. She wanted to know if you'd altered much.
And what did you tell her?
I told her that you had. She thought I meant that you were still grieving.
You...
What do you mean, still? I never agreed. She is very beautiful.
Yes, she looked very beautiful.
I mean, Juliet is very beautiful. You were asking about her.
You were asking about Mimi. I told her the worst was over. She said I was lying, that you would not have got her out of your mind so quickly, that you were in a fearful state when she left.
I wasn't.
I told her I knew you were, but that you'd got over it, that you had someone else now, though I didn't know about Juliet at the time.
I must go and meet Juliet.
She said she was worried in case you came after her. Her lover is very jealous and an excellent shot. And she asked if you kissed the hands of your new mistress as often as you used to kiss hers.
And
I told her you did it just as often. And that in addition you were engaged on a project of kissing each hair on her head. And that you had agreed to remain together until the task was finished.
Oh, what wonderful lies you tell, Colleen. What did she say to all that?
She suggested that your mistress must be, if not exactly bored.
Juliet has a wonderful head of hair.
I asked her if she still loved you, and she said she had never loved you in her life.
That was true, at least.
And then she quoted something from one of your poems.
Oh, which one?
Something about there being nothing that can move the memory of one's first love. Now tell me about Juliet. Why is that pigeon a clock?
Because Juliet insists that if she is Juliet, I must be Romeo. She has a balcony and I must climb it. She will not love me unless I perform the role properly.
And the bird?
And the bird. Wilt thou be gone? It is not yet near day. It was the nightingale and not the lark.
But that bird is neither a nightingale nor a lark. It's a pigeon.
It is an actor. It is playing a role just as I am. Juliet is not the real Juliet either.
When Romeo arrived at Juliet's house, there was indeed a balcony. But as her room was on the ground floor and the balcony was no more than 18 inches high, the rope ladder was superfluous, though she insisted that Rudolph should use it. He hung the cage containing the pigeon in the room, and at 5 o'clock the next morning, the lovers were awakened by the birds cooing.
Well, there it goes. Now it's time to go onto the balcony and bid each other despairing farewells. Come on, get up.
That bird is fast. It is nowhere near dawn. It's November. There'll be no daylight for hours.
All the same, I'm going to get up.
Why?
I'm starving.
Me too. Look, I'll build up the fire while you get something to eat.
Doesn't seem to be much. Onions, scrap of bacon and some butter.
There's a little bread here, but not much.
Oh, I'm so hungry.
I'm ravenous.
Hark! Tis the nightingale.
No, tis the lark.
Actually, tis the pigeon.
No, tis breakfast.
Oh, he had a very nice voice.
He'll be very tender.
There's a tear on your cheek. You weep for the herald of the dawn?
No, not really. It's the onions. Christmas and we're broke again.
Just look at those windows.
What, the truffle turkey? Mm.
Good God, look at that.
What, the duck?
No, that sign above the shop. It's your crossing of the Red Sea, Marcel.
So it is. And it's some ass has added a steamboat. I told you that one day it will be seen by thousands.
Oh, have we no money between us? I have 10 sous left from my fee for those verses the Corsair published.
And I have 15 sous for cutting up one of Solomon's old masters.
Oh, I have a whole franc.
Not a sou.
It's enough. We'll have bread, wine, cold meat, tobacco, fire and light. It won't be a feast, but it's better than standing here in the cold looking at one.
Fire's going out.
Well, the logs are damp. You still haven't burned that bunch of dead flowers, Marcel.
And you still have Mimi's glove.
It's one thing to break free of the past. It's another to consign it all to the flames. Who on earth can that be?
Sonar, probably. His room's colder than this.
He wouldn't knock. Good God. Mimi.
Hello, Rudolph. Marcel. I was very cold. I saw the light as I was passing. I'm sorry.
My dear girl, come and sit by the fire. It's not much.
Oh, it's very nice. The thing is...
What?
A been turned out of my lodgings. I don't know where to go.
You're no longer with your little Viscount.
Not for these last 2 months.
You were unfaithful to him?
No. There was a row on account of those verses you wrote about me. He caught me reading them and he kicked me out. I expect it would happen anyway.
I heard you were rigged out very nicely. Dresses, jewels, everything.
He took the lot. For all his money, he was a rotten skinflint. I did my share of purgatory with him, I can tell you.
Does he know of your present difficulty? Oh,
I'd rather die than ask him for a suit. It makes me sick when I think of it.
You can't have been living alone since you left him.
Oh, yes, I have. I've been making artificial flowers and a model for painters. Marcel, have you a job for me? But only head and hands, nothing else.
Are you hungry?
Yes, very.
Well, there's not much, but here, have a glass of wine.
Oh. You're angry, aren't you, Rudolph, that I came here? But where else could I go?
No, I'm only upset to see you like this.
Oh, that's all my own fault. I'm not complaining. What's done's done. Oh, Rudolph, can't we still be friends just because we were once lovers?
Of course we can.
You're at home here, Mimi.
Of course. Oh.
Morning, Mimi.
Oh, Marcel.
Do you sleep well?
Yes.
Where's Rudolph?
He said something about going out to get some breakfast for me. We talked most of the night. Oh, it's very sad. He still loves me.
And you? Do you still love him?
I've changed a lot, Marcel. I think I do now. For the first time.
If you cannot do without one another, you'll have to stay together. Either way, it's hard.
It's more than hard, Marcel. It's impossible.
Why?
When I came here last night, it took me over an hour to get up the stairs. If I'd found a woman here with him, I'd have gone straight down again through the window. I haven't any strength anymore. Rudolph just stared at my arms and shoulders last night. But all the same, I was pretty once. And he did love me. Oh, God. Marcel, I'm going to die.
You mustn't give up hope, Mimi. Care and rest. He still loves you.
Yes, I think he does. He says so anyway. But I don't want him to lie beside me. For I feel as if the worm's already eating away my body.
Oh, he's coming back.
Wonderful to see you. Mimi, my darling Mimi. You little baggage.
It's wonderful to see you again, Mimi. Did you get any money, Rudolph?
Tonal sold his winter coat and collie and some of his books.
We have fresh bread and coffee and eggs and butter and cheese and everything to make you well, Mimi.
I'm no longer a baggage, Alexander. You mustn't call me that. Rudolph has forgiven me and I'm going to wear wooden shoes and a mob cap from now on. Silk spat for my health.
You remember Laliou? He's a doctor now. He's coming to see you soon. He'll have you better in no time.
He's that brilliant, is he?
Well, Laliou, you simply cannot keep her here. I'll give you a letter for Lapiti. If she lasts till the spring, we may perhaps pull her through. If she stays here, she'll be dead in a week.
She'll refuse to go. She wants to stay here.
Take her in tomorrow. Today, if you can.
Of course I'll go, Rudolph.
God.
The doctor's right. You cannot nurse me. At the hospital, they may cure me. See, there's a big difference. I want to live now.
Oh, Mimi.
You get chicken in the hospital and they have fires.
That's right.
I'll be taken care of. And you can go out and earn some money. And when I'm cured, I'll come back as pretty as I used to be. Now that I'm happy, it'll be easy to get cured. I'll drink all the nasty things they give me, I promise. Look, my colour's coming back already. It's because you lot make me laugh all the time. It was that bloody Viscount who made me ill.
That's it.
There we are.
Come
along. Sit down now, gently.
Now, do what they tell you. And eat what they give you.
Oh, don't worry, Rudolph. Huh? I'll be good. Bring me some flowers. some violets, if you can. It doesn't smell very nice.
Now, don't you worry, don't you worry. I'll bring you flowers. Right. Until Sunday. Oh,
yes.
Goodbye, Mimi.
Oh, sure enough.
Goodbye, Mimi.
Bye, Colleen. Yes. Yes. Rudolph! Rudolph, take me home! I don't want to stay here. Take me home, Rudolph. Please, take me home.
There, there, child. You'll be all right. We'll look after you.
I'll die here, Rudolph. Please, take me home. Rudolph! Please!
Twice more, Rudolph and the others visited Mimi, and the day after their last visit, Rudolph received a note from a medical student whom he had asked to keep an eye on her. The note said,
"My dear friend, I have very bad news for you. Number 8 is dead. This morning on going through the ward, I found her bed vacant."
And though Rudolph did not cry, he did not go home for a week. Occasionally, he was seen shambling through the back streets, dirty, and often drunk. Then he cleaned himself up at a friend's and returned home. On the way, he met the same medical student.
Rudolph! It's good to see you. Am I forgiven?
Forgiven? For what?
For the pain I caused you. For the mistake.
What the devil are you talking about? What pain? What mistake?
I put a note under your door the day after I told you about Mimi. Didn't you get it?
I haven't been home for a week.
So you haven't seen her?
Who? Seen who?
Oh, God. Mimi! I made a mistake. I'd been away from the hospital for a couple of days, and when I got back, Mimi's bed was empty. So I asked the sister what had become of the patient. She told me she'd died during the night, but it was someone else.
What?
Mimi had been moved to another ward.
When was this?
The day before yesterday.
I must see her!
Rudolph,
you took your time. What's happened?
Suppose the letter I wrote you last week was true.
True?
This morning at 4 o'clock.
Take me to her. I want to see her.
She's no longer there. She's in that van. It collects the unclaimed pauper corpses. Would you like me to see you home?
No, thank you. I need to be alone.
And I was alone for a while. I couldn't even bear the company of the others, of Schaunard, of Marcel and Colleen. You complain of the sadness of Mimi's death? The times were not always happy in Bohemia. And I am not pledged to make you laugh. Of course, I was Rudolph, a fancy name which Schaun, who was Schaunard, thought ridiculous. But it was then the fashion for fancy names, and my own name, Henri Mugère, would not have been suitable. Too plain. They wanted someone with a romantic name as hero, or however you wish to describe the kind of role I played in this, in this episode. Colleen was made up of two people. Wallon, a theological student, and Trapadou, who was a complete mystery, for he never said anything. Marcel was Champfleury. All survived, though there were many others who could not endure the harshness of the life and left it for one kind of death or another. Charles inherited his father's toy factory and became a rich bourgeois. And I am expecting Champfleury at any moment. He remained Musette's friend and occasional lover for many years. Her real name was Mariette Roux. I don't think she ever loved anyone but Marcel. Once she showed him the ivory box containing the 40,000 francs she had earned, if not by the sweat of her brow, then by the grace of her body. A few years ago, she decided to take a ship to Algiers, and she was drowned in a freak storm, along with her gold and her ivory casket. Oddly enough, the vessel carried a consignment of Charm's toys. Dolls, clockwork, rabbits, that kind of thing. As for Champfleury, he became the keeper of the National
Museum of Ceramics at Sèvres.
And therefore part of the artistic establishment. How are you, Marcel?
You know, it was only during Musette's last visit that I found out that you and she had known each other before she came to me.
Nothing happened between us. I don't think either of us ever knew why. But I shall never forget my first sight of her. Not quite 18, and a burst of laughter and a pink bonnet.
Hmm. If you're feeling nostalgic, we'll go and dine tonight for 12 sous at our old restaurant in the Rue de Four, where we used to eat our dinners and feel hungry.
Oh, Marcel. I've no objection to looking back on the past, but it must be through the medium of a bottle of good wine and from the depths of a comfortable armchair, my friend. It's all very well for people to paint Bohemia in rosy colors, but you really must have madness and determination firmly anchored in your mind to go on living a life like that when those you love best disappear one by one. For my part, I consider those who lead a calm, orderly life in their own homes to be supremely happy. But then what would you have me say? I am corrupted. I only care for what is good.
Or at least comfortable.
In The Bohemians, Clive Francis played Rudolph, Christopher Good, Colleen, Christopher Schuller, Marcel, and David Timpson, Schonard. Holly James played Femme, Miriam Margulies, Mimi, and Tina Marion, Musette. Durand was played by John Webb, Mouton and Dr. Lalieu by Clive Panto, the waiter and medical student, Richard Hugh, Louvette and Benoit by Kerry Francis, Maurice by Giles Cole, Mariette by Carol Boyd, Juliet by Fiona Walker, and Bernard by Timothy Bateson. The music, based on Valse Grise by Maurice Jobert from the film Un Carnet de Bal, was arranged and played by David Timpson with Gustav Clarkson viola and Michael Hurst flute. The Bohemians was dramatized by David Nathan from Scènes de la Vie Bohème by Henri Mergère, and directed by Ian Cotterell.